This is Adam Carrico, and you're listening to 60 Frames Per Second, Episode 10. This is a podcast about the latest in the video game world. In today's episode, we're talking about my first time with an Xbox 360, hands-on with Xbox Live Arcade, really fast games on your PS3, Half-Life 2's episodic gaming technique, controller mods, and a whole lot more. Get ready, because you're running at 60 frames per second. Welcome back to episode 10 of 60FPS. That intro music was from podcastthemes.com, the people I've been trying to get one since episode 2. That's just a filler one from right now for them. I actually have two or three other ones from users that I'm going to use pretty soon. And then he's actually going to make me a real one so that I can use it in all my other episodes. This episode is a week late. I did say it on the side if you haven't been there. I just needed some time on it. It was going to be a huge show. I didn't want to put it out something 2 hours long. So I did what I think the best of the best is and put it in this. One big thing last week was that I played a ton of games on Xbox Live Arcade, including some that will be seen on the 360. Then my Walmart got its 360 kiosk. This episode, I will just give some first impressions and such, and what I think on the games later. Also, news hit hard this week, but with much to talk about, I nixed a bunch of it that wasn't important. I also got Star Wars Battlefront 2, and so far, the game is better than the first. Expect a full review next episode. I won't give away a whole lot, but just say that I really had to pull myself off to record this episode. Today, let's start with some more on the 360 kiosks. As many know, they have been put into Walmarts, but now they are even being spotted at EB Games, and those at EB Games look a whole lot cooler, have the nice HDTV just like Walmart, but also have their own stand. They actually have two controllers. I was left sad since my Walmart was 360-less. Until this week when I walked into the electronics buying Star Wars Episode 3, and bam, right there was a white controller. I looked up immediately and saw an HDTV with a menu on it. Then in the middle, a brand new console. I dropped Star Wars, which is really odd, and just started playing around with it. I only got to play a bit of Cameo, but of course I'm going back to get more in depth and just to play them. The device is a whole lot bigger in person than I expected. Microsoft's trying to put this slim image, and how they're doing it in all their pictures makes it look slim until you actually see it. People who have actually seen it said it's around the original Xbox size, and I have to agree with them, it's probably that big. The controller looked almost exactly the same in terms of layout like the Controller S. When I grabbed it, I just knew exactly how it worked from the Controller S. I felt around, checked it over. I tested the new guide button and shoulder buttons to feel how they would work. The shoulder buttons felt natural to push. My index fingers, of course, rested on the triggers from my Xbox, but I just pulled them off to get it with ease whenever I needed it. The face buttons felt a little more loose than the Controller S, but it didn't really matter that much to me. I don't know if it's going to make a difference whenever we get ours. The guide button looked really cool. I started Cameo, and as the Microsoft logo was coming, I pressed it. A screen came up, taking, around the left side of the screen, with what would be my gamer tag, etc. I didn't push it in the game whenever I was actually playing, but Microsoft says that it automatically pauses the game, and like you're on the Xbox 360 dashboard. I'm going to need to try that one on my next visit. Be sure to come back next episode on what I think of the games and a little more in depth on it. A big debate on these kiosks is whether the controllers are wired or wireless. They have a wireless icon on them, but I thought it was just to tell that you can be wireless play with them and not that they were. The only time I've ever seen a wireless controller out for play was in a Best Buy. It was one of those Logitech ones, which really is nice. And it was really cool to use. It felt nice. But I don't get how they don't think people are going to try and steal it, even though you need the thing to plug it into your Xbox, which happened to be, like, in an entertainment center, like, stored in that, for the signal to get it. Anyway, Joystick has gotten a hold of some Xbox 360 kiosk installation manuals. It shows that the controllers are indeed wired. This makes sense, because you wouldn't have to worry about charging with wireless, and if somebody happens to rip it off the plastic, it's still usable with the wireless, unlike the Logitech, since all the stuff is built into the 360. Now, we all have our kiosks in North America, but what about other parts of the world, like the ones Microsoft is really trying to get to buy their new system? The Tokyo Xbox 360 Lounge is now officially open in Japan. We all knew that, one, it would be big, two, it would have 360s and food, and we had some concept art that looked amazing. Now we actually have pictures, not concept art, but actual pictures taken at the lounge. I will post them in the show notes. The place looks just extremely nice. I bet it cost a huge amount of money to make this thing. I hope Microsoft knows what they're doing, because the only money they're making off of this is from food, and they're mostly just snacks. This could mean advertising, but even viral marketing gets me more excited, and I've had that a lot. Of course, I haven't been there, and maybe it's just so much fun that'll make me want a 360. It has a lot of games on the 360s, like the new Ridge Racer, along with Japanese-only titles. If we had one where I lived, I might spend my whole weekend there, since I think it's free. By the way, all the controllers are wired there as well, so nobody's going to steal them. I've talked about places with 360s on display a lot, but what about the places that actually have shipments of them for sale already? Xbox Circle has sent some pictures of Xbox 360s in the back of a GameStop store. They're all stacked and the boxes look real enough, but you never know. There are a lot of them, so no telling if they're display boxes or not, but that is highly unlikely. I don't know if it is real or not. It's kind of hard to tell. I mean, they look like the display boxes I've seen at an EB Games I went to, but there's so many of them, I don't think they need that many. Go to your local GameStop, get in a conversation, then casually ask them and see what you get, then report to me. With the 360 not even out yet, it's weird that we already have mods for the system. Well, not exactly for the system, but for the controller. Llama, a person who worked on a ton of Xbox mods and has great detailed instructions on repairs, etc., got a hold of the Xbox 360 controller for Windows PCs. Now, the only time I've ever been to Llama's website was back, six months ago or so, whenever my Xbox broke. He had great detailed instructions on how to clean your disk drive and everything, so I popped that sucker open. So I popped it open and just cleaned it, and it worked fine right after that. I didn't have to buy a new one. So, first, he just took the Xbox 360 controller apart. No big deal, but for Llama, he really needed something cool. He made the Xbox guide buttons light, which show what screen you're on if you're playing on an Xbox or PC, I guess if you have split screen on a PC, turn blue. He just changed around the LEDs, added some new ones that were actually blue instead of green, and then that made the outside turn blue. Then he was disappointed that the actual middle of the Xbox logo didn't light up itself, so he got four more LEDs and put them in the middle of that so it glowed. The mod looks really cool, and he makes it easy looking with guides. Of course, they're probably not as easy as you think, but if you want to try it, all are posted on his sites with pictures and even videos of it. I will link to it in the show notes so you can check it out for yourself. Condemned Criminal Origins is probably the best-looking 360 game out there, in my opinion. The gameplay mixes CSI-type missions with first-person action and survival horror attributes. I was thinking this game would be a holiday launch, or even early next year, but I was way wrong. It is the first next-generation game to be finished and sent to the production lines. Sega and Monolith should feel proud, knowing that they don't have to do much work for the next month or so, just waiting for launch. It will, of course, launch with the 360 at a price of around $60. I hope it's cheaper, but that's what it's become to seem. Condemned already had me hooked on its videos of gameplay, but apparently the story should be pretty good too. Sega put up Condemned the Prequel, a collection of episodes that might lead up to the game. I haven't watched all of them, just a couple, but it was alright, just not too exciting for people like me. It isn't really a movie per se, but more of an interactive adventure game. You click on stuff, which activates movies in it, like you might click on a door and then it shows you walking into it. You're going to have to try it out for yourself and see if you get hooked. It does give what the game's missions will be like, in the form of the scary type CSI type stuff, just without the pointing and clicking, and it will have a lot more action than this does. Also, there's supposed to be some Condemned movies. I don't know if this is going to give a little bit of insight on what they're going to be like, too. One reason Halo 2 has been so popular on Xbox Live is its ranking system. One reason is that you really want to be a high level to brag about it. If you get to level 50, then of course you're going to brag about it. And I mean, I have friends on my friends list who send me messages every single time they gain a level, in leet speak of course, telling me how much they rock. Once you get to a level 50, and a lot of times when you're level 50, you're a modder, or glitcher, or cheater, you play some more, and then in one night, you can lose 3 to 4 weeks of progress. Believe me, it is so annoying. Then, the next day, you'll proceed to get it back again. Another reason is that when you play, you get matched with people around your skill level for a more even match, and more fun. Microsoft caught on to that and has a system set up that would use it on every Xbox Live game. Called True Skill, it gives you your true skill in a level, which is not as easy to decrease as in games like Halo 2, which is a big plus. When you first get a game, you play a good amount of matches, say 50, and it will have a pretty good level for you. Of course, after more and more you play, then you will gain more and more levels from your new skill. It's very complicated on how it works, but if you get all these algorithms and crap, which they actually put the algorithms for it on their website, I'll link to the page in the show notes. You can check that out. There's also a calculator, so you can set up like the score and what place everybody gets in, and if it's a free-for-all team game, to see exactly how many levels you're going to go up or go down. This doesn't say anywhere this will be used on all Xbox 360 games, but it does have the 360 and Live's logo on the top. We will have to see on the new titles if all games will be required to use this, or if the system will have it, or if it's just there's an option. On Major Nelson's website, he does mention it and says something about the new Xbox 360's Live True Skill thing that we're using. So, it's probably just a part of Xbox Live now. I talked about Xbox Live going down last episode, and then my Xbox being unveiled later that week. Now, it's out, and of course I'm using it. Since I have a current Xbox, it only shows my picture, gamer zone, and well, that's it. To show you some of the cooler features, I will use Major Nelson's gamer card to show some stuff, and that's going to be posted in the show notes. It has his avatar, a dragon, which he got because he unlocked that achievement in Cameo Elements of Power. His reputation is a 3-star, which I'm guessing is by default. He has a gamer score of 30 from getting different achievements. His zone is family right now, but does keep changing from day to day if you keep watching it. As of recording, he is offline, last seen 25 minutes ago, and he was on the Xbox 360 dashboard. A recent game he played was Cameo, where he recently got the Pummelweed, allowing him to transform into an elemental warrior. Another game he played last on Halloween night was Hexic HD. His favorite games are Halo Triple Pack, Fable, Call of Duty 2, and Cameo. He owns a Dreamcast, GameCube, Xbox, Xbox 360, DS, and Genesis. Now, that might seem like a lot of information, but every bit of it was on his front page, and it's really condensed and doesn't seem like a bunch. If I wanted to, I could go deeper to check out every single achievement he's made in every single game he's played, and then compare them to mine, and then actually see how long he's played games, etc. I know this is a lot of stuff, but it's going to be cool once we all get 360s and we're showing who is better at Cameo, you or a guy who actually works at Rare. Before I go on, a little quick bit on the 360 games packaging. It's green and clear, which looks really cool. Just thought I'd say that. Look for pictures in show notes. Remember me talking about some Xbox Live Arcade games? Well, I've played some of the ones to be featured on the 360. I got the Xbox Live Arcade disc just to see what it was like, and I had a ton of fun. At first, I had Ms. Pac-Man, which alone is just hours of fun. Then, I looked at some games. There wasn't a huge selection, maybe 15 or 20, but each game had a demo for free that you could download. I got about 10 different games, including two whose sequels will appear on the 360, Marble Blast and Mutant Storm. I also played many others, the demos, but luck would have it, my two favorite out of all of them were these. First, ease of use. All you did was click X on the game and then you started downloading the demo. Say you didn't want to wait for it, pause the download and start at the same spot. If you want to purchase a game, just click A, and I didn't buy any games, but I bet if you, it just charges to your Xbox, to the credit card in your Xbox Live account. The first game I downloaded was Marble Blast. When I played it, I thought about Super Monkey Ball. The controls are very near the same, and the platforming elements are just really close to it. But this is a free demo, so it's already better than Super Mario. It has many levels, and each one had a different challenge, or many different challenges. I considered buying the full version, but just held off thinking I would get it for the 360 instead. Next, I got Mutant Storm. The controls are interesting, and it will take a little bit to get used to. It's a 2D top-down shooter, where your ship is put into an arena of sorts. To move, you use a left analog stick. And you don't have to turn, just point it to where you want to go, and it'll zip in that direction. You shoot with a right analog stick by pointing in the direction that you want to shoot. If you have played any games that make use of both sticks, especially like Katamari Damacy, then you won't need to get used to it as much, since you'll be a little bit skilled in that, but it's still going to be different. The enemies start out just little ships that don't usually shoot, and then they'll get harder and harder and start to move faster, and then get bigger, and you have to break them down into smaller ones, which just gets crazier because there's so many, and they're all shooting at you. Yeah, the demo is pretty crazy. Because, for one thing, the levels go from 1 to 4, then 5, then up to 19, and in the 30s and upwards. Since it skips around, it starts out very easy, but then gets very hard. There wasn't a level select or save feature either, so once you get to level 45 and die, you start back over. I don't know if it is true for the full version, but that's if it isn't, then that's the big reason that I didn't buy it. The new one on the 360 will probably be a must-download, Mutant Storm Reloaded. Overall, these games are better than most free games on your computer for the demos, but cost too much in my opinion for the full version, since they are really basic games. If you don't have an Xbox Arcade disc, get one. Or just wait a few more weeks and get the 360, which will have it built in. Half-Life 2 was one of the coolest games last year, but of course you already know that, unless you're a big console gamer or your PC is outdated. So Valve is going to be porting it to the Xbox. On first look, compared to the PC version, the graphics are ugly, but I hope that they look better whenever it's in full motion. The physics are said to hold up well, like on the PC, and the story is exactly the same. It is gold and will be out in November 15th. Half-Life's creators wanted to test something, but wanted to see how players liked it. They also wanted to put out what is episodic content, different levels for games about every 2 months. They combined the two with Half-Life 2 Lost Coast. It was built to show HDR, or high dynamic range lighting. If you don't know what this means, basically, in the level, the sun is the only source of light. It doesn't have all the low-res stuff to make it comfortably run on PCs like mine, which I can run it at the second worst resolution, so I didn't try it out. Of course, I only think my computer can't handle it since I can't. Of course, I only think my computer can handle it since I can't find the system requirements, and it won't tell your system can't run the game until after you download it. When I first heard of it, I thought it would be two things. One, a full expansion pack, like a brand new game, on store shelves, also available for download through Steam, and a cost. And then, two, a full game, not just one level. People who've played it said it's only 15 minutes long. Of course, it's Half-Life, so the replayability is great, just like in all of the games in the series. So you will get a bit longer out of it. If you have a high-end computer and Half-Life 2, then you owe it to yourself to at least try out Lost Coast. I talked earlier about Condemned Criminal Origins prequel site. It, you know, kind of had the interactive game with the movie mixed in. It did show some of the story for the game, just like BewareSamFisher.com. It's, of course, for Splinter Cell 4, but not as straight put what's happening like Condemned. It has a picture of someone's desk, presumably the police department's. You have a cursor, and you can move it around and click certain objects. Right now, there are a few papers, pictures, one message on an answering machine, and a TV. On the first day, you can find a picture of Sarah Fisher, Sam's daughter. If you read the newspaper excerpts on the desk, you find that she died after leaving a graduation party, run over by a drunk driver. Another paper, probably the most shocking, is a notice saying that Sam is being discharged from the third echelon. The TV shows a weird video with too much stuff happening to tell much. The message is from Sam himself, saying that you have no idea what's coming, and he'll be the one you're looking for. A few more things have been added since then, like a picture of some guns, a passport of Sam's under the name of Martin Juan Perry. Then there's some strips of a photo reel showing Sam with different close-ups. There's also a phone number in the corner, and if you call with your cell phone, it has a weird conversation with two people who sounds like some of the characters in Splinter Cell Chaos Theory and all the other games, and it sounded like they were looking for Sam and looking for somebody. You can then sign up for SMS with the text messaging, and they said every time they're going to send you text messages and crap, but I signed up for it and I haven't got anything in a day except one that told me to go to the BewareSamFisher.com website. One person on the first day was out dissected the site and found pictures on it already, but when he announced it, Ubisoft took them down. They had more newspaper excerpts, and they say basically that Sam is now on the bad side, in armed robberies where he was said to have killed civilians. A warning sign was another paper stating his features and that he's armed and dangerous and has a picture of him. Will the newest Splinter Cell game be against the good guys? Will you actually be hiding from the feds or even trying to steal? I hope that he goes back to the good side eventually. I don't want to play a whole game as a bad guy, but in my opinion, this would be a good plot that no one was expecting in the slightest. Whatever happens, this campaign has made me want this more, and in the other Splinter Cell games, I didn't listen to the stories much, but this one I know I am. Final Fantasy on handhelds have always been great. Well, only two have been released, but they were still both good. So why shouldn't I be excited when they're talking about Final Fantasy III, turning it 3D, and putting it on my DS? Hiromichi Tanaka has talked about a few of the details for the new game. One thing that we noticed from the screenshots are the beautiful 3D graphics. He said these are only virtual 3D, so that you see 3D graphics, but you can't move the camera around. So, technically they're 2D. Yeah, it sounds weird, but I think he knows what he's talking about. One reason I think they did this is because they don't want to make the graphics less pleasing for us fans. It might make them more blocky and etc., but whenever you have them in a 2D kind of style, but where it looks 3D, then they're going to look as nice as they do. Also, it solves any camera issues you could face when having to move the camera. It does it by itself. You still can zoom in for details, though, and I bet you can get some form of limited movement in that. He said with the overhauled graphics engine that each character will have personal traits and characteristics, making the story a lot better. A big thing that shocked even me was that they plan on making it fully playable by the touchscreen. As much as it sounds good for any game on the DS, it doesn't for Final Fantasy. Because, I mean, it's easy to control with the D-pad already, and this game was originally made with the D-pad in mind. A thing that didn't surprise me is that the game will use Wi-Fi, but he said that it won't be in place of the single-player campaign, which sounds like no co-op, but a way to enjoy the game with friends. Co-op would be really good for this game, though. I mean, you've got four characters, you could all fight, and then actually walk separately instead of that one person. Look forward to this one sometime next year. Hopefully with co-op. Right now, the standard for a good console speed is 60 frames per second, where I got the name of this podcast. On computers, of course, you might surpass that, and it can get crazy when you go pretty fast. You know, I've seen 80 frames per second. What if, perhaps on a console, you got 120 frames per second? Ken Kutagari said with the PlayStation 3, this could be possible if only TVs got good enough to support it. I know, this sounds crazy. It is a claim that speed-happy PC users will love, maybe making them get into the console scene. But in my opinion, it just won't work. First off, game developers will be pulling their hair out to get it if that's the standard. I mean, you wouldn't want to be running it less than what's the fastest out there. Secondly, what gamers will be able to play at that speed, since it seems too fast for your eyes? Of course, there's no definite amount of frames that your eyes can see. I actually researched it on the internet before this, so who knows? Finally, what game seriously needs to go that fast? I mean, maybe a racing game for, like, it's got a bunch of stuff happening, and, I mean, first-person shooters, that's still, like, above. You don't really need to go but 60 frames per second in one of those. In maybe a flying game, but you know, mostly it's just too fast to play in, maybe like for cinematics and stuff. I wonder if someday the name of this podcast might change to 120 frames per second. We'll just have to see. You know, PlayStation 3 has got a bunch of big claims. We don't know if any of them are going to work. Metal Gear Solid 4 looked really nice. One of the biggest selling points on the original PS2 and the PS3 is its ability to play backwards compatible PS1 and for the PS3, all PlayStation games. As you heard last episode, the new PlayStation 2 Silver Edition had some issues with backwards compatible games. It's not a so smart move by Reiko Sakamoto of Sony. They stated that the PS3 would have some of the same problems. I still can't believe they said this. It is very honorable for them to, not cheating us. They are actually the ones testing all 8,000 games for the system released in Japan, and are still not done. I think Sony is dumb and nice. Good for them. Oh, wait. The stupidity is not over, but the good of the company is. The official PlayStation magazine says that Sony will not use a central online structure for all games like Xbox Live and Nintendo's new Wi-Fi connection. Can you say, whoops? This means every online game will be like it is on the PS2. Crap. This is because every developer has to make the online structure themselves. It does mean this could be free, because if every online game charged you, well, we would be broke. I don't get it, Sony. You and Nintendo were both lost online to the Xbox Live. Everybody who really loved online games got an Xbox for Xbox Live, and have a chance this generation. Nintendo's made their new Wi-Fi connection. Why can't you just make something? Speaking of online, what about the PSP in that? They're doing quite well with it, because mostly because of portable Wi-Fi access spots, except for the fact that you can't actually talk to other players. With the DS, there's a microphone built in. It hasn't actually been implemented, but some people at Nintendo have actually talked about if it could be used for gaming in that way. Wait, some people have gotten pictures of a PSP headset. PSP Distro has some pics of what really look like Sony-branded PSP headsets with the microphone. It would make sense, with SOCOM coming to the system soon, and that was the game that brought the mic to the PS2, you're really going to need it. I recently got a mic for Xbox Live. It really changes gameplay. I mean, I'd just be sitting there, and I couldn't tell anybody, like, if I got sniped. I couldn't tell them where the sniper was. And in, like, about any online game, we have teamwork. It's just really good, especially for trash talk. Without it, especially in a game like SOCOM, most strategy and teamwork is lost. Hopefully we get this for the holidays, so it can be a good Christmas gift. I'll link to the pictures in the show notes. A lot of people haven't got their minds into how the Revolution controller will work. I kind of have a good idea how it will work, but a video that showed up on the net kind of showed me more. It has a guy playing Half-Life 2 Deathmatch, controlling with a mock-up of the Revolution controller. In one hand, a controller that simulates the nunchucks with an analog stick and two buttons on the back for shooting. They're not on the back, but that's what they're simulating. The next hand is supposed to be a wireless device that tells you where you're pointing, but it's hard to tell if it's real or not. I'm guessing it's a laser type thing with a smart board monitor that moves the cursor with it. He controls it all fairly well, and it has picture-in-picture, so you can see what he's doing while he's doing the controller, so you know that what he's doing really happens on the screen. Go check it out for yourself. I'll link in the show notes. StarCraft Ghost, one of the most delayed Blizzard games ever. Well, at BlizzCon, the Blizzard's convention, it was playable, and probably means that it'll be out next year sometime. But it was only playable on PS2s and Xboxes, with network play being the big seller. So what about the GameCube? A person on the Blizzard forums at Battle.net asked the same question, if the GameCube was going to be just left alone. And a representative of Blizzard said that indeed the GameCube will not be blessed with this game. Why? Well, since the game is mostly online, and the GameCube really doesn't have that, well, you know, you get it. They said that Blizzard's origins are on earlier works from Nintendo platforms, and that they said they will consider future GameCube and Revolution games. Sorry, Nintendo fans, save up for a next-gen system. Video game movies plus U-Bowl equals many angry fans. With the latest addition to his video game movie collection, In the Name of a King, A Dungeon Siege Tale, he is trying something different. He's going to split it into two editions, coming out right after the other next year. The movie will be a long, epic adventure, and to make it easier for distributors, he's making it shorter. He means that for theaters that don't want to play a 4-hour movie because it means less showings don't have to. It also means that we don't have to sit through all of it. And the money that he will make will be even more, since it will be out twice. Now, will the movie be good? I know U-Bowl has a bad reputation for this stuff, but is it really all his fault? Watch the Within a Minute documentary on the Star Wars Episode 3 DVD to see exactly how many people are involved in the making of just 1 minute, so how many people are involved in the whole movie for all of his. Maybe this one will be good. The first part will debut on November 3rd, 2006, with the second on December 1st after that. So, of course, it's a really close date. Well, that's the end of this edition of 60 FPS. I hope you enjoyed it as always. For more information, like show notes, production updates, feeds, direct download links, previous shows, and even more, check out 60framesper2nd.blogspot.com. To email me with questions, comments, user-created items, and more, send to 60fpshost@gmail.com. Stay tuned next episode for some Battlefront 2 reviews and my impressions on Xbox 360 titles. Thanks for listening to this episode of 60 Frames Per Second.